When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. All right, headline jobs rising. But the inner strength, how about that, is very questionable. The Biden economy looks like a part-time economy. Now we've got all three big money co-hosts to break it down for us. This is special. Taylor Riggs, Brian Brenberg, Jackie DeAngelis. And then next after that, why is Joe Biden betraying Israel? And is Jack Smith's classified documents case against Trump imploding? We've got the great Professor Alan Dershowitz for all that. And then Doug Collins and Breitbart's Alex Marlowe. A little bit of politics on the Democrats' latest illegal student loan bailouts and ballot harvesting climateers. And then my pal Scott Hodge later. How much damage will Biden's tax hike really do to the economy? The answer is a lot. But first, let's go to our own Grady Tribble for all the details, all the gory details, if he can figure them out on today's jobs report. Grady, yeah, I used to do this kind of work regularly on Wall Street. It was much simpler than I don't know what these numbers mean. Six different ways. Help me out.
It depends how you look at it, I guess, yep. Larry. And it might come as no surprise to you that the Biden administration is focusing on the good aspects of this jobs report. They actually just put out a statement as we were coming on the air saying, are you better off than you were 4 years ago, comparing this jobs report to March of 2020 when former President Trump was president. And the statement highlights that in March of 2020, the economy lost over 1.4 million jobs, but you might remember that was right at the start of the pandemic, and the campaign makes no mention of that. Nonetheless, digging deeper into the numbers, we're seeing that the two sectors seeing the biggest gains in March, healthcare with 72,000 jobs added and government right behind with 71,000 jobs added. Because those are the two leading sectors, some economists are raising concerns that government spending is propping up the economic data. Leisure and hospitality returned to pre-pandemic levels. Construction added 39,000 jobs. But manufacturing, a sign of whether we are making things, that was flat after losing 10,000 jobs in February, which, by the way, was a downward revision.
And I think the construction does play a part in this story, which is you got to build the factories before you can have people working in them. And so we expect that, you know, in 2024, a lot of those investments are going to be really, you know, we're going to see the factories go up, and then we're going to see more growth in manufacturing.
All right. We'll see if that growth in manufacturing comes. Wages, by the way, also up 4.1% from a year ago. Good in that it means more money in workers' pockets. But that could also put upward pressure on inflation. And for that reason, hope for summer rate cuts is dwindling.
I don't see that rate cut coming, which means that our small business owners, the regular consumer, where credit card debt is at the highest levels, they're the ones that are suffering.
And the number of jobs added in February was revised down by about 5,000 jobs, so not a massive adjustment like we've seen in some recent jobs reports, Larry, but a downward revision nonetheless. Larry?
Grady, can I just get this back at the beginning? The Bidens put out a circular and compared this to March of 2020. When the entire economy imploded because of the pandemic, and they didn't mention the pandemic, which is the stupidest. Wait, I can't swear on TV. It's a family show. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Even for them, this is a new low for stupidity.
You would think they would make mention that the entire world economy was shut down in March of 2020 when asking the question, are you better off than you were 4 years
ago? All right. I see another permanent Pinocchio. That's what this is going to be in the Washington Post. Thank you, Grady Trimble. We appreciate it. I had a couple thoughts for me. Whatever your interpretation of the March jobs report, the fact is the Federal Reserve is not going to cut its interest rate target this year. Not going to do it, folks. Inflation is inching up, not down. Commodity prices booming, including world oil prices. Gold has exploded higher. The official price indexes themselves have been moving north, not south. Nor is the Fed going to move its 2% inflation target. Grocery prices have increased more than 50% since 2019, according to the Wall Street Journal. A typical basket of groceries, about $100 worth about 5 years ago, would require about $140 today. And while the underlying strength of the economy is up for debate, it has not fallen into recession. And whatever you think of the validity of the jobs numbers, the fact remains the rate of unemployment is 3.8%. That is not a recessionary indicator. And if the Fed were dumb enough to ignore the actual data and went ahead and started cutting rates, it would be viewed as a political attempt to juice the economy in order to reelect Joe Biden. Biden has already told the Fed to cut rates, as have the usual far-left senators like Sherrod Brown, Liz Warren, and Bernie Sanders. In other words, round up the usual suspects. But Donald Trump and every Republican official would just pound the Fed into the ground if they tried to pull a full-hearted stunt like an election year easing, while inflation continues hot and the economy is resilient. And the Republicans would be correct to pound Jay Powell into sand and the Fed for that kind of election year shenanigan. Meanwhile, Joe Biden has an inflationary budget, massive spending, record deficits, and Treasury market overload borrowing. So on the one hand, the Bidens are trying to inflate the economy. But on the other hand, the Fed is trying to restrain it. Doesn't make a lot of bit of sense, does it? Meanwhile, Mr. Biden wants tax hikes in virtually every nook and cranny of the economy. Companies, individuals, investors. Hey, a 50% capital gains tax. How about that? And then foreign income from U.S. multinationals would be slammed. And also that would let foreign governments decide tax burdens on American companies abroad. Pure insanity. $3 or $4 trillion worth in higher taxes that would smash enterprise and blunt any hope of long-term economic growth. Biden's huge spending and taxing policies, along with his manic government regulation of energy and his attempts to force feed electric vehicles that nobody really wants, thereby ending gas vehicles that most folks love. Well, all that's causing something of a rebellion around the country. People don't want government bureaucrats to tell them how to live or what they can or cannot buy. This country loves freedom, not big government statism. The country loves consumer choice. That's a big part of their love of freedom. And as for the jobs numbers today, well, the top line print says 303K. That's right. But if you look under the hood, this is so strange. There's 26.8 million part-time workers, and that includes a 691,000 jump of part-time workers in March. Meanwhile, full-time workers fell 6,000. So go figure. Is this a part-time economy? Folks with multiple jobs to make ends meet, by the way, increased by 217,000. Meanwhile, in the private sector, industrial workers fell 164,000 after dropping 151,000 in February. That's not good. Hat tip to former White House economist, my great pal Joe Livornia, on that one. And additionally, over the past year, foreign-born jobs exceeded native-born jobs by 1.3 million. Now, I know there's controversy over this. I want to state that the Bureau of Labor Statistics labels this legally employed, foreign-born. So that's very important. So it doesn't appear that this comes out of Biden's catastrophic open borders policy that has generated roughly 10 million illegals with a massive crime wave to go along with it. Now, we will revisit this issue of foreign-born job numbers as time goes on and more data is available. But really, really, the major reason for Joe Biden's sub-basement economic polls is the country has no confidence in him or his ability to generate future opportunity and prosperity. I mean, real wages have fallen badly during his term. Middle class working folks don't believe he would fix that if given a second try. And I think that's the real story. All right, let me stop. Joining me now, the fabulous co-hosts of my favorite show, The Big Money Show, Taylor Riggs, Brian Benberg, and Jackie D'Angelo. You guys should hold your hands up just to make sure everybody knows.
Raise your hand when your name is called.
There we go.
Present.
That's me.
I'm present.
Brian, I don't know what to make of this. I'm going to start with you because I'm starting with you. You're the biggest of the group. And I don't understand. You, one thing I should have put in my riff, and I'll mention it here, is the government affected, is about 150,000 of the 300,000 from government. Now, I'm using government plus health and social assistance,
right,
which is essentially government.
Right.
Private insurance companies are in the financial component of
yeah.
this. So you got 150,000 rough government jobs, half of it. Then you've got these incredible stats about part-time workers.
Yes.
And so I don't know what to make of this number.
Well, this is one of those days where you start with the headline number and you think, it looks pretty good and the revisions weren't so bad. But then you go to that household survey, which is what you did to get the part-time numbers, and you realize, my gosh, all of the job creation this month was part-time. And in fact, E.J. Antoni at Heritage points this out, that's been the case since February 23.
Mm.
So for a year, we've seen part-time. Now, what's interesting here, Larry, is you made the case you can't cut rates with this kind of data.
Mm.
Then you look at the data, and it's not as strong as you think it
still
is.
Still can't cut
which
rates.
Raises the question. I know you're confident about the Fed not cutting rates there, but this is not the rock-solid report that
no, I agree.
Leads you to that conclusion.
There's no question about that, rock-solid, not. Taylor, the reason I'm the commodity price level signals are wrong way. And actually, the price indexes are wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fed can't move when prices are rising. And you've got now people may not subscribe to this, but I would keep an eye on CRB, gold, mm-hmm. energy, oil. Maybe this is Middle East, Iran retaliation on Israel. Maybe not. But the point is, it's all moving north. Fed needs it to move south.
If you think that gold is a classic inflationary hedge, then you're getting a little nervous. If gold's at 2,300, Dennis Gartman was on earlier this morning. He wants gold to go to 3,000. But he also says if you're out buying gold bars at Costco, then that usually is a sign that gold has peaked. So we'll have to wait and see. I think if you're Neil Kashkari right now, you're looking pretty good because about 24 hours ago, he came out and he said, we could do two cuts or we could do zero.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's when you wake up today and look at these numbers and think, maybe we do zero.
Now, the stock market was okay, Jackie. It was a whatever it was, 300 points today, yep. Dow Jones.
Yeah.
It didn't offset yesterday's drop of 500 points. It will be down for the week. So I'm saying I don't think stocks have a clear message at the moment. But, I mean, we're going to have to sort through. I don't understand. Is this a part-time country? Is this a part-time economy? I do not understand this. And we also have to sort through the native-born versus the foreign-born, which may not be a bad thing. Let me just add that. Because, again, the Bureau of Labor Statistics labels this. These are legal jobs, green cards, visas, and whatnot. But what's your take on this sort of constellate, put the government side. Everyone's working part-time and foreign-born taking over.
I see a lot of problems in this report. So I agree with you, Brian, on a headline number basis. They have a right to be able to say, oh, this is a good jobs report. And it might lead the Fed to sort of pause with respect to what its navigation plan is going to be on interest rates. But having said that, what hit me was the point that you made about the government jobs. Even if we go with the 71,000 number, why are we adding that many jobs? And we have been in the last few reports, as we are in healthcare, which is a sector where you really need to add people. That's something that the country is in dire need of. So what is happening here is you've got Joe Biden growing this economy. And I talked about you this morning in our meeting. I said, if you ask Art Laffer, you ask Larry Kudlow, that's not where they want to see the growth from the government. Basically,
it's not real growth.
The same way he's trying to buy votes, whether it's with student loans or all of the EV stuff that now he's doing handouts in the swing states. With respect to this, he's kind of propping up the government, having them hire to make these numbers look better than they are.
You know, I love that point. Taylor, here's what I love that point, and it could be a jobs point. They're proposing, the Bidens are proposing, an $8 billion spending plan to hire 50,000 climate core people. I call them little climateers.
That's like inflationary on two fronts.
I mean, can you, first of all, they'll count them all as 50,000 more jobs, government jobs. That's point number one. They can't get that done fast enough. Second of all, they're going to send them. I know what they're going to do with them. All these little, you know, climateer people, radical zealots of what they are, they're going to be involved in mail-in ballots and harvesting of ballots. They're on a mission. In fact, the whole government is now on a mission. They're trying to get DEI spread throughout the government, and they're trying to lift all the political laws so the government bureaucrats can go out and work in this election, which they are not supposed to do. Because they work for the federal government.
I am.
This is one big harvest. And it is not a Thanksgiving harvest. This is a steal the election harvest. Sorry.
2 points that are inflationary there. One, green energy has proven to be inflationary as we transition. So that's a problem for people at home. It's a problem for the Federal Reserve. It's a problem for the Biden administration. The $8 billion in spending, tack it on to the trillions of other amount of spending that we put out there that, yes, is also hugely inflationary. And my concern is maybe that $34 trillion in debt isn't going to bite us in the bottom tomorrow, but eventually the music stops and that money comes due. And I don't know if it's our kids or our grandkids, but someone's going to have to pay for that. And we're all going to pay for that in higher taxes. Right. That's why I'm against all of the spending and some of these green initiatives.
Mm. Brian, what do you make of this? I can't let go of this because I wasn't aware of it. The Bidens put out a press release saying how much jobs have grown since March of 2019, which would have been the low point in jobs for decades because of the pandemic. Now, that is an even bigger lie. I mean, the other lie that Biden got a perpetual Pinocchio on, what would they call it, a bottomless Pinocchio from the Washington Post, was that he cut the budget deficit by $1.7
trillion. Right.
He's actually increasing it every year by about $1.7 trillion. But on this one, this could be a brand new bottomless
Larry
Pinocchio.
Larry needs a new category of
what?
Pinocchio. For
they
this.
Just lie with impunity, for God's
but
sake. They can't do that.
Well,
There's a moral issue here. Didn't they know we just had Easter? Actually, they don't know
I
that
don't
either.
Think so, Larry.
They don't know that either.
I think they celebrated something else.
Yeah, you're right. I'm on it, but we can't talk about it because we're a family show.
It's desperation, Larry, when you make a comparison like that. That's like me saying, comparing my bench press today to when I was in seventh grade.
Ooh.
It looks great, but it doesn't mean I made any progress over the last couple years. But you do that when you don't have a story to tell. And, you know, they don't have a story to tell.
Yeah.
That's why all the polls show you that people have no confidence
in
this.
Yeah, I think that's very important. You know, we have to get out. But, I mean, I think at the end of the day, all these details that we work through, blah, blah, and you're all very good at it, and it's wonderful, and it's what we kind of do for a living. But the fact is there's no confidence in Biden or in Biden's ability to prosper us and provide opportunities in the future.
They're propping
isn't that
it up,
really?
And it's a house of cards, Larry.
Yeah.
So I want to see manufacturing jobs. You want to talk about growing this economy the right way and making Bidenomics work for somebody? Show me growth in the manufacturing
sector.
You
know, that's important. There is some manufacturing construction going on because of the subsidy bills, but there are no manufacturing jobs.
No.
I mean, I'm looking at this. Not only zero this month, but the 12-month change is 25,000.
Uh-huh.
We haven't
had
the 12-month change. The 12-month change is 2,000.
Yeah.
That's pathetic. That's absolutely pathetic. All right. Well, I'll just say this: we're going to end this on a bottomless Pinocchio. March 29th.
As bottomless as you can get.
I mean, that is just as low as it goes. Taylor Riggs, Brian Brenberg, Jackie DeAngelis. Be sure and catch them on the Big Money Show. Every day at 1 p.m. Eastern. It's a terrific show, folks. You got to watch it here on Fox Business. Thank you, kids. Appreciate it very, very much. All right. Why is Joe Biden betraying Israel? Oh, my God. I got to go through this, too. We'll ask great Professor Alan Dershowitz right here on set. I'm Kudlow. Thank you, folks.
Hey, folks, it's your man, Keyshawn Johnson, here to talk about Angie, formerly known as Angie's List, your go-to home services, marketplace for getting all your jobs done well. Now, you might be wondering, what exactly is Angie? Well, let me tell you, it's the nation's largest home services marketplace, connecting over 150 million homeowners with skilled professionals to tackle any project, big or small. As a homeowner myself, I always have things I want to work on for my house, whether it's general home renovations or fun projects like putting in a pool. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it a breeze to research, compare, and hire pros, ensuring every job is done well. Whether you're fixing a leaky faucet or planning a full kitchen renovation, Angie's got your back. And get this, folks. Angie's pros aren't just any old contractors. They're your neighbors, often running small businesses right in your community. Plus, they've been rated and reviewed by others in your area, so you know you're getting quality service. So why stress over home projects when you can turn to Angie? From finding the best price to scheduling a pro at your convenience, Angie's got you covered every step of the way. So get started today at Angie.com. That's Angie.com, or download the app today to get started on getting all your jobs done. That's Angie, your trusted ally in home services.
All right, question for the House. Why is Joe Biden betraying Israel? At least that is my view on the subject. Let's bring in the great Alan Dershowitz, professor emeritus at Harvard Law School and author of the important book, War Against the Jews, How to End Hamas Barbarism. Thank you, Professor, very much for this. I just want to talk to just on the phone call where it was so blameworthy and appears to be changing policies with respect to war funding and ammunition and not weapons against Israel. That's a possibility. But basically ordering them to negotiate with Hamas and to make a ceasefire with Hamas. Hamas hasn't agreed to any of this, as per usual.
Well, more than that, whenever the United States turns against Israel, the result is Hamas backs away from making any deals. Hamas says to itself, why should we give up any hostages? Biden's doing our job for us. CNN's doing our job for us. The New York Times is doing our job for us. Tony Blinken's doing our job for us. They're all making Israel lose. Yeah. And if Israel is losing, no matter how many people die in Gaza, Hamas will continue. And so the Biden administration is not only betraying Israel, it's betraying the peace process. It is contributing to a continuation of Hamas fighting. I have to tell you, if Joe Biden had stuck with his original statement in support of Israel, this war would be over and every hostage would have been
Israel
released.
Would have done the job it
That's
knows
right.
it can do. It wouldn't have had a failure. Exactly. I couldn't agree with that point more. Let me play you yesterday. We interviewed Nir Barkat. He's the economy minister.
He's a terrific guy.
A rising star
guy,
in Israel.
Former mayor of Jerusalem.
That's correct. Yeah. Here's one of his lines from the interview yesterday coming up.
I did not hear one word demanding Hamas to surrender. Right. I expect people to say, Hamas, surrender. We will haunt you all over the world. Qatar, we're going to haunt you from now on. You have to choose sides. You can't play two sides.
So I didn't hear any Hamas surrender in Biden's phone call either.
No.
I mean, what is this all about?
Well, not only that, not even a criticism of the refusal by Hamas to come to the bargaining table. Israel has come to such, made just great efforts. Not everybody in Israel supports this. Some really want to not stop the war. Mm-hmm. But Israel is put on the table, and the United States has as well, and Hamas has refused. And every time Biden shows weakness, Hamas shows strength. And that's why Hamas loved the fact that the United States didn't veto the Security Council resolution. Mm-hmm. They were just laughing up and down. Iran loves it. When Hamas and Iran love something, you know it's wrong. And so what the Biden administration is doing is against peace.
You know, I was kind of thumbing through the readout from yesterday's phone call and also the Kirby press conference afterwards. They're now saying from the original October 7th, post-October 7th, where the U.S. government and Biden's were totally behind Israel, totally behind Israel, wiping Hamas off the map. That was their original position. They're now saying that they still support Israel's defense against Hamas. That is a different measure than in saying that they favor Israel's annihilation of Hamas. And that's like saying, okay, we'll have these ceasefires And if Hamas comes after you, what a surprise, then we'll give you a green light to defend yourself. That is completely wrong. That is a complete turnaround in the wrong direction from this war.
I completely agree. What they're looking for now is a tie, not a win for
Israel. That's right.
And
yes.
A tie is a win for Hamas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Biden recognized when it comes to Putin, he said if he wins in Ukraine, he's going to move into Latvia and Poland. The same thing is true with Hamas. Mm. If they have a tie, which is a win, if they hurt Israel, which is what they're doing now with the help of CNN and the Biden administration, they're coming to a theater near you. And Putin learned that. It literally came to a theater near him in Moscow, even though it wasn't Hamas. They learn, all these terrorist groups, learn from Hamas, learn from al-Fatah. Terrorism was essentially invented by Palestinian extremists, and we are allowing terrorists to win, and it's going to hurt us in America. It's a national security threat to the United States to help Hamas win.
And President Biden basically is doing this for political reasons. Everybody says so. It's not just me. He's got troubles on his left and his far left or whatever left. But I think those are the worst reasons to change foreign policy.
You're absolutely right. But he also has trouble in the center. Let me tell you, hours before Joe Lieberman died, we were corresponding to do a statement. I put it ultimately in the Wall Street Journal, saying that with people like Lieberman and me and others who are traditionally Democrats but who support Israel, don't count on us voting for you this time. Mm. We have open minds. You have to earn our votes. And I have to tell you, he's not earning my vote these days.
Yeah, he's going to lose vote of sensible people. That's what you're saying. Common sense people.
And Christians and Jews, people who support Israel. Don't mortgage those votes, which are much more, to 200,000 Arabs and Muslims in Michigan. This two-state solution, Michigan and Minnesota, is going to hurt the Democrats. Mm. So it's not only immoral, it's dumb.
Mm. I knew Joe Lieberman pretty well.
He was a wonderful man.
Pretty wonderful man. Pretty ethical man, too.
Great man.
All right. We're going to give you a rest because you're coming back for the next segment. We're going to talk about some legal matters, but it's wonderful to have you here on set. As always, coming up, Jack Smith, special prosecutor. His classified documents case against Donald Trump may be in some deep trouble. Greg Jarrett's going to talk to us, along with Professor Dershowitz. I'm Kudlow. Please stick around. Plenty to do. Whatever.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, let's take a look at Special Counsel Jack Smith's case against Donald Trump, and let's ask if there are problems, is it imploding? Back with us is the great Alan Dershowitz, along with Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst. Greg, let me start with you. Unlawyerly that I am, I really don't understand. This is an argument about jury instructions, as I've tried to read through this in several publications. And Judge Cannon down in Florida has offered different options, and Jack Smith is violently against him. Can you walk us through? And then we've got the great Alan Dershowitz here to comment as well.
Well, Larry, Jack Smith is notorious for thuggish tactics. He has railroaded defendants only to be chastised in reverse. And now he's pulling the same shameful intimidation tactics with Judge Cannon. He demanded that she accept his version of proposed jury instructions, excluding Trump's main defense, the Presidential Records Act. And he went so far as to threaten to have her kicked off the case if she didn't capitulate. Correctly, she told him to stuff it because jury instructions are never finalized until all the evidence and testimony is introduced at trial. My goodness, if I had made that kind of a dumb demand of a judge in the cases I tried, the judge would have told me to stand in the corner with a dunce cap. Because a judge can't possibly know how to instruct a jury until all the evidence is presented. I think Cannon has been tolerant of Smith's contemptuous, abusive attitude, whereas other judges would have held him in contempt for his insubordinate arrogance.
Alan Dershowitz, do you see it the same way? And the two scenarios, have to do with the Presidential Records Act. I'm not sure people understand that. Maybe you could give us a snapshot.
Okay, well, first, I always agree with the great Greg Jarrett.
Oh, all right. Well,
number
that's great.
One. Number two, what Jack Smith is terrified about is he might actually have a fair trial in Florida. He okay. knows he's not going to have a fair trial in Washington, D.C. 95% of the voters hate Donald Trump. He knows there's not going to be a fair trial in Georgia, certainly not in New York. And he's terrified that this judge in a fair county in Florida might actually give Donald Trump his rights to a fair trial. Mm. So he's doing everything to provoke the judge, possibly make a motion to recuse. And Greg is, of course, right. Instructions have to wait to hear what the evidence is. And generally, you don't give the instructions in advance, because if you do, it then gives the other side, if you're the prosecution, an opportunity to appeal. Gave him a real favor on this issue of the Presidential Records Act. Now, the Presidential Records Act may come out ultimately against Donald Trump. Mm. We don't know. It's not absolute.
But that's the thing I didn't understand as a layperson. Why are we arguing over jury options now? They haven't even had the case yet. That's they right. haven't gone to trial yet. Nobody's that's been right. in court yet. So and what's the point of
it? We don't even know what
Smith's
the
just
is.
Trying to one-up her or what, Judge Cannon or what?
He's trying to force her to make decisions that will allow him to appeal. He would like an appeal as soon as possible because he doesn't want to delay the trial. Remember, too, the Trump people are being accused of trying to delay the trial. That's nonsense. It's the prosecution that's trying to rush the trial. Jack Smith said the people of the United States are entitled to a guilty verdict before they decide who to vote for. That's almost an admission.
He actually said that, by the way.
Yeah, that's actually an admission of election interference.
I'll be damned. Greg Jarrett, that's kind of interesting. Smith actually said that people are entitled to a guilty verdict before the election. What if it wasn't? How does he know what the verdict is going to be? I mean, this guy does overstep quite a bit.
He does.
He is not Mr. Personality, that's for sure.
Oh, no, he's not. And he doesn't come across well to jurors. Just ask some of the jurors in the cases he lost. Mm. I mean, the Presidential Records Act, as the professor said, is a potentially viable defense. Bill Clinton used it to keep classified tapes in his home after he left office. And at the time, the Department of Justice argued the act allows him, a former president, to keep whatever he wants. And a federal judge completely agreed and so ruled. Now, fast forward more than a decade because it's Donald Trump, the DOJ has reversed itself, renounced the act, and is prosecuting Trump criminally. This is another instance of selective prosecution and unequal justice.
Greg, one other thing I'd like to ask you fellas about. Your good friend Letitia James, New York's Attorney General, I know you hang out together. She's now saying that Mr. Trump's bond from the surety company based in California is not good and that it isn't registered in New York, as I understand it. Do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, she's wrong, as usual. Trump paid all cash for the $175 million bond. He fully collateralized it. It is a valid bond. But Letitia James, who got spanked by the appellate court, is now trying an end run to disqualify the surety company by claiming, well, it's not a standard carrier in New York. Well, it doesn't have to be. Mm. It is a surplus or excess carrier. And as long as it's sufficiently capitalized, and it is over $1 billion in equity, it can offer Trump's bond. And that's what it's doing. The truth is, you know, James got humiliated by the higher court. She is desperate to stop Trump's appeal, seize his assets. She doesn't care about the law, only about fulfilling her campaign vow to, if I may borrow the professor's book title, get Trump. Mm.
No, you're right. And the other example of a double standard is, obviously, the Trump people are trying to recuse the judge in the criminal case in New York on the ground that his daughter works for Democrats and would profit financially if he were to be convicted. And the Democrats are coming in and saying, no, 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 you can't do anything about a daughter, but what about Clarence Thomas? Mm. They're trying to get him recused because of his wife. It can't be what's good for the goose isn't good for the gander.
And is Greg right? It seems pro forma that, that this insurance company in California, it's well capitalized and so forth. It can operate in all the states.
Of course. And we do have an interstate commerce clause that does
Who raised that on this show once upon a time? I did. I actually know something about that. It's the only thing I understand. Professor Alan Dershowitz, thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
Love having you on set. Hey, Greg Jarrett, you come from that big fancy vacation place. Come on set soon. We miss you a lot. All right, folks, we're going to talk some politics right now with Breitbart's Alex Marlow, the editor-in-chief of Breitbart News, co-author of the Breitbart Business Digest, and author of Breaking Biden, and Doug Collins, former Georgia congressman and host of the Doug Collins podcast. Gentlemen, welcome back. I got a couple for you, a couple of beauties. This is maybe too easy, Alex, but the first one is, once again, Joe Biden is coming in and insisting on expanding the student loan cancellations. There's yet another story that they're pitching. I don't know. I probably read it on Breitbart News. The Supreme Court said, no, you can't. Biden says, yes, I can. And with impunity, he keeps raising it and adding to the student loan cancellations. Alex, I always ask, what part of the English language doesn't Biden understand? But let me get your opinion about that. It may not be about speaking English.
No, it's not. This is about buying votes, and he's trying to buy the votes of overeducated liberals who took on too many student loans and aren't making a lot of money. A lot of this, Larry, by the way, there's a racial element to this, too, because black Americans have a higher ratio of debt to income from student loans, and they're going to get a comparatively less of a handout from Biden. So I think the left should get on this. But this is a great day if you love inflation. It's a great day if you're selling cars or you're a landlord. And all of these people are going to get more money because of Biden's handouts. And, of course, all of it's inflationary.
But doesn't just quickly, I'll go to you, Doug. If you all these people are going to get more money, that is true. But far more people are not going to get any money. I mean, the last I looked, the ratio was about 70% not, 30% will, more or less, okay? So that 70% is going to be teed off at the 30% and at Biden. Or am I wrong?
No, I think you're right, and I think there's going to be some pretty good media consultants and folks on the Republican side. If not, in the fall, I'm giving them a hint, knock, right here, is something that can be played up in September, October, when you go at these voters who are disenfranchised, believing, you know, again, they're disillusioned with Biden, they're disillusioned maybe with the system, but they see what's going on, and then all of a sudden you can have Donald Trump, who's talking about these elections, who's talking about the real issues of economics, and he says, look, he said, this is what Joe Biden's doing to you. You're maybe not seeing it, but I'm going to tell you the truth. This is what he's doing. He's taking from you and giving to them. And I think that is exactly the message that people are going to resonate to, because they're tired of seeing a government that stokes the very issue, inflation, by putting money into a system and then claiming that they're either trying to fix it or it wasn't their fault. That's just hogwash.
All right. Alex Marlow, Claudia Tenney was on set a couple days ago and raised this point. There's a presidential Biden executive order coming that basically says to all federal bureaucrats, go on out there and work in the election. You can help for the direct mail. You can help for the harvesting. You can undertake any political tasks you want. An executive order throughout the federal bureaucracy. Alex, we've never had that before. And it violates all the canons of the Hatch Act and so forth. But that's where they're going.
Yeah, that is what they're doing. And they've been doing this the entirety of Biden's administration. I did write about this a bit in my book, Breaking Biden, which you've been kind enough to plug, Larry. So thank you for that. They're also using this not just to get out the vote effort. They're trying to enshrine DEI. All of this is a hedge against the prospect of Trump winning, because they know, the left knows right now, Trump's way ahead and he's the favorite here. And they want to make sure Joe Biden in particular, he's got a legacy and he's got a chance to preserve it. And look through every one of these moves, every executive order between now and Election Day. Look at it with that lens, and it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I mean, Doug, they can say whatever they want, Republicans foiling democracy, but it is they, Democrat. I mean, Alex said, they're enshrining DEI in the federal bureaucracy. They're doing everything they can to protect the tenured bureaucrats, because they know Mr. Trump's going to come in and look for major reforms about this federal bureaucracy, which is always there forever and is quite liberal, unfortunately. The other thing is they're developing this climate corps. Are you familiar with this, Doug? The climate corps, $8 billion for 50,000 people, right? And what do you think that's going to do? These are young people, by the way, that get paid plenty of benefits by the federal government, including helping, you guessed it, student loan cancellations. And they'll go out and harvest their little tushies off. That is what they are going to do if such a thing ever came to pass.
Oh, I agree with you completely. Here's an interesting thing. You just got off talking about legal issues. You're talking about the court and the lawfare going on. Here's an interesting issue. Here's what happens when a president is unchecked by a Department of Justice or anything going on to what they're doing. This is, I mean, you hear no pushback on this, these blatantly unconstitutional acts that are going on, dealing with the issues with the student loans, which has already went to Supreme Court. Now you're dealing with the Hatch Act. Now you're dealing with federalizing, for a party. This is what happens when they're all in agreement politically. They're all in agreement policy-wise. This is why people are very frustrated right now, why we continue to have to get this message out, that this is truly just not about Donald Trump or whatever you may think. Yep. It is about you and your individual rights.
Yeah, it could happen to you. Alex Marlowe, Doug Collins, thank you both. Appreciate it. Folks, coming right up, Scott Hodge, Tax Foundation, is going to tell you what a disastrous Joe Biden's tax hike proposal is going to be. And I mean disaster. Cost $800,000 to $1 million jobs. Try that one. All right, I talked about the disastrous Joe Biden tax hike plan at the top of the show. Here we go again. Scott Hodge, President Emeritus at the Tax Foundation, has got a new book, Taxocracy, What You Don't Know About Taxes and How They Rule Your Daily Life. But you've priced out, you and the Tax Foundation have priced out this Biden plan. It's a disaster. What, 700,000-800,000 jobs lost? GDP falls a couple percent. Wages fall even more, Scott. Well, talk to us about this plan. If you tax something, if something moves and you're taxing it, you're going to get disastrous results.
Larry, I call this the biggest success tax plan that I've ever seen. I mean, we're looking at a gross tax increase of about $4.5 trillion over the next decade. Mm. And after you discount a bunch of child tax credits, it's about $3.5 trillion. It's a massive, massive tax increase. But let's look at some of the other impacts of it. It'll raise the corporate tax rate, and we'll once again have one of the highest corporate tax rates in the industrialized world. It raises personal income tax rates for upper income people to nearly 40%. When you add on the other taxes that go with that, including state taxes, some states will have top tax rates over 50%. Mm. The capital gains rate will be nearly 50% all in. This is a big hit on both U.S. multinationals, small businesses, and, of course, the investor class. Basically, the successful people in America are the targets of this massive tax increase.
Well, it's a reversal of the Trump tax cuts that were very, very successful. And, of course, yes. Biden has tried to reverse all of Trump's successful policies with, I might add, unsuccessful results. These estimates you have, Scott Hodge, I'm going to call it 800,000 jobs, 2% GDP. Is this one-time loss or is this a recurring loss?
It's over time. It's over the next decade. That's how we'll see the impact on long-term GDP, long-term jobs, and long-term wages. So these things happen gradually. As the tax increases rolled out, the impact will be significant in the short term. But the real impact is over the long term. As you see the economy begin to slow, you see investment begin to slow, and you see wages begin to decline, and ultimately all those jobs will be lost.
Well, that's the thing that occurs to me. If you're penalizing investment and activity, overall activity by business, as well as investors, if you're penalizing that, that's going to cause higher inflation also, because the supply of goods will be shrinking or slowing, even while the government is spending all this money to boost demand. I mean, that's just going to put us right back in the soup.
It's bad economics, bad tax policy. There is simply nothing to be said in favor of this type of a tax plan.
All right, got to get out. No, yeah. I appreciate it, Scott. We'll talk about the book on the radio, too, Scott, coming up. Scott Hodge, everybody, from the Tax Foundation. I'm Kudlow. Stick around. Last word right after this. I just tell you again, the Biden betrayal of Israel, does great damage to Israel's national security, does great damage to our national security, and it's a plus sign for Iranian terrorists.
from the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.